Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tierney ou le grand pont pour éliminer Furlong. Qu'est-ce qu'il lui a fait là? Qu'est-ce qu'il lui fait, Kieran Tierney? Kieran Tierney, c'est quoi? C'est quoi ça? Il vient souhaiter une très bonne année aux supporters d'Arsenal. Kieran Tierney, quel rush! Magnifique! Magnifique! Magnifique!
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnarblog. James, goodly morning to you and goodly 2021 to you as well, and to everyone else listening.
Goodly 2021 and magnifique morning, Andrew, I think, after that introduction.
Magnifique! That's it. I'm going to use that a lot, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, 2021, I mean, as we were just saying off mic, so far so good.
So far so good on the football front, definitely. Yeah, I mean, isn't it incredible? I mean, you know, the turn of the year does present an opportunity for a fresh perspective on things, but the perspective on Arsenal does seem to have changed almost overnight. I mean, you know, that run of three victories has made everyone feel a whole lot better.
It is one of the good things about the Christmas period. You know, because there are so many games that things can turn pretty quickly. And look, let's not be blind to the fact that we were not exactly optimistic when we were going through that really terrible run. And it was hard to see the wood for the trees, the light at the end of the tunnel, or whatever way you want to call it. But you have three games, you win three games, two of them away, one against Chelsea. And you're thinking, hey, This is actually quite good. I can start thinking about other things in relation to the team and everything else, apart from how the fuck are we getting out of this mess we're in. So that's good. I like that.
Yeah, it is an opportunity, the Christmas period, you know, as well as a hardship to really put a decent run together. And it's, I mean, the fortunes in West London and North London respectively show you how quickly things can change in the Premier League. It is kind of incredible.
That it is. We did have some requests for some hashtag Lampard out stuff, but I feel like, you know, it's probably tempting fate just a little bit. You know, we've been through a really bad period. We've won three games. It's great, but let's not get ahead of ourselves too much. As enjoyable as Lampard out is and everything else, I feel, you know, not quite there yet to be able to gloat or to mock, you know?
No, and we're probably Lampard in for now. So, you know, I think that's where my flag is in the ground. But yeah, it does illustrate, I think, you know, quite What a weird sport this is, but also what a weird season. And actually, like, the table is quite compressed. I mean, Arsenal's position suddenly looks substantially healthier than it did.
Well, yeah, I mean, people were using the R word. And, you know, I can understand exactly why that was happening. I don't think it was really a reflection of the squad, you know, as much as we might take apart some of the issues that we've had and some of the quality issues we have with certain players. It's certainly not a relegation level squad, but results were, you know, heading that way. So it was easy to see why people were talking about it. Now people are looking up the table instead of over their shoulders. And that is the way it should be. I think that's the trajectory we want to be on and the trajectory we need to keep ourselves on. So, you know, three games out of three wins, brilliant, but let's keep it going from here. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So look, let's talk about this game against West Brom. You know what? When we kicked off, and when we fucked up the kickoff, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be one of those where the next day you sit down and you write the blog or whatever it is, and you go, from even before kickoff, Arsenal didn't look quite at the races against a Sam Allardyce team who were plucky. And, you know, we'd seen them do what they did against Liverpool. You know, I fully expected them to be a lot tougher to play against. So you see us fuck up the kickoff. It's snowing. The conditions aren't great. And it's going to be an Allardyce team that are going to dig in. They're going to be physical. They're going to make it very difficult for us. Wasn't really the case, but I did have that moment when we messed up the kickoff. I was going, oh no, here we go.
Same. And I was kind of thinking, I mean, I don't even really know what they were going for. They were sort of like a rugby style up and under. They overloaded the left wing.
Someone did a video recently, which is basically a compilation of all of our kickoffs this season. And it seems to be a tactic in that instead of keeping the ball, passing it backwards, keeping the ball and building possession, we almost immediately hit a long ball to one of the flanks.
To try and make territory.
Almost. Yeah, exactly. You know, to get the line out and what have you. So
sure, yeah, and then we can really, you know, push for the try. It is an interesting one. I similarly was like, oh, for fuck's sake. But fortunately, things improved. And just to sort of go back to the starting lineup, my big thing about this game was that given that we had 7 days afterwards until an FA Cup game, and even so, that was an FA Cup game, not a league game, I hoped we wouldn't change the team too much. You know, I hoped the platform would be there to continue the momentum, and it was really. I mean, I think Martinelli coming out the side made perfect sense, given the fact that he's still on the way back from injury, but you know, I there were some people who were annoyed by that, but people are always annoyed by this starting lineup. It's just something we have to get used to.
It is true. No matter what team you pick, there's always going to be somebody who's annoyed about some aspect of it. Yeah. I think, you know, would the people who were annoyed at Martinelli's absence from the starting lineup be more or less annoyed if, you know, having spent 9 months out, you know, without playing any real competitive football, having played 3 games in a week or whatever it was, or, you know, would they be more annoyed that he picked up a hamstring strain because he's been picked again? Or, you know, how do you rationalize that? So I like you. I think it made perfect sense, particularly as Lacazette has been very good in the last couple of games, could come in at centre forward, and you've got Aubameyang to play there on the left-hand side. So, you know, it made all kinds of sense for me. I didn't really have any issue whatsoever with our starting lineup.
No, nor I. And, yeah, I mean, once the game got underway, once we got over that kickoff debacle, like you say, things were relatively straightforward.
I think it was probably the best 45 minutes we've had of the season. At halftime, I certainly said that. It was the best 45 minutes I think we played. And again, look, people go, it's just West Brom. I get it. I get that it's just West Brom. We all do. But we've had expectations going into games against teams, and we've really badly underperformed this season. So when we actually play well, let's try and find some kind of encouragement from it rather than always giving it the caveat of, well, the team we're playing are shit. You know, the team we're playing, yeah, they may well be shit, but Liverpool couldn't beat them a week ago. You know, so let's try and put it into some kind of perspective in that sense. And if you're worried or if you're angry or frustrated about Arsenal not playing well, not creating chances, not taking shots, when they do what they did in that first half, what's the issue? We're doing exactly what you want the team to do and how you want the team to play. They're performing that way. So, you know, get on board with that, I guess.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, that first half was really sharp for Arsenal. And I thought that was exemplified by Bukayo Saka, who sort of was involved in a flurry of early chances. Yeah. There was one where he, Lacazette played him in and he had a shot off his right foot. Then there was that curling shot, which Aubameyang almost got a toe to, I think. It felt like, you know, in that first 15 minutes, he was just way too good for West Brom. I thought he was superb on the day, and I think is kicking on and maybe reaching another level in his performance.
We might talk about what this means for other players in the squad a bit later, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on Saka from the right-hand side. You know, whether it's by accident or design, it works. Mm. It really works. It's more effective than anything we've seen from the right-hand side this season. So, you know, it might be a happy accident. It might have been something that Mikel Arteta was forced into. But the fact that it is working is a huge positive.
It is, and I think the contributions that he's making are seeing his confidence in the role grow. I mean, whose confidence wouldn't be boosted by what he did against Brighton, you know, spinning and being his man. But I just thought from the first minute, he was electric. And I think it's really encouraging. I think there is certainly a hefty dose of accident alongside any design in the fact that he's now playing there and shining there. But it is worth remembering, you know, he did start the Community Shield in that position right back at the outset of the season. So it's not something that's never been considered for him. And I think you're right. I think we found something there with him and with Hector Bellerin behind him. They're combining much better. One of the interesting things about Saka is, for a left-footed player, he's quite happy to use his right foot at times. He'll have a shot or he'll have a cross or a cross that might be a shot against Chelsea off his right boot. And that makes him maybe less predictable than some of our other options in that position.
Yeah, well, look, it's hard not to think of Nicolas Pepe because he is very keen to use his left foot at all times, you know, to the detriment of some of the movement that he can make because, you know, basically when he's out there, we know or defenders know that he's going to come back in on his left foot. The defenders, you know, when they're facing Saka, they don't quite know. I mean, they probably suspect that he's going to try and use his strongest foot. But even when he does, you know, that effort that you talked about where it was a shot to the far post or a cross shot to the far post that Aubameyang nearly got on the end of, a couple of step overs, back in on his left foot and he whips it in. You know, even if the defender knows, there's that element of doubt in there. And I think, you know, I think he does combine really well with Hector Bellerin. And I think it would be remiss of us not to talk about what the presence of Emile Smith Rowe in that area of the pitch is doing for pretty much everybody. You know, I don't want to get overboard or go full on the hype train with Emile Smith Rowe, but I think I said to you on a text, what's really interesting about him is that he combines with everyone. It's not just like, oh, he's got a good relationship with Saka, or he's got a good relationship with Aubameyang, or he can, you know, link between Danny Ceballos and or whatever it might be. You know, there's moments where he's playing one-touch passes to Alexandre Lacazette, with whom he's barely played. You know, the really interesting thing about Smith Rowe, and I think we do have to be cautious about him and what we can expect from him in this second half of the season, is just his ability to glue things together with anyone, regardless of where he is on the pitch.
Yeah, and that point about where he is on the pitch is really important too, because, you know, you think of a number 10, you typically think of a guy sort of standing in the centre between the midfield and the attack, but that's not where Smith Rowe spends the game. You know, he pops up absolutely all over the pitch. He fills in, he rotates. I've seen him supporting his fullback, you know, offering defence in those areas. I've seen him pick the ball up in the left back spot, the right back spot. He spends a lot of his time wide. He pulls left. Look at our second goal. You see, he kind of interchanges positions with Bukayo Saka on the right. He's bringing so much fluidity to this team. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a really, really exciting prospect. Like you, I'm cautious, and I'm mainly cautious for physical reasons, just because we've seen Smith Rowe in the past. He's struggled on that side of things. But from a technical and tactical perspective, he's having a tremendous impact. Yeah. And also, the other thing to say, by the way, about having shifted Saka from the left to the right, one of the people I think that's had a really interesting impact on, and also sort of not asking him to play as a third centre-back anymore, is Kieran Tierney. And the outlet and the drive that he has offered since that positional change on the left side is massive, isn't it?
Yeah, well, let's talk about Tierney then and talk about the first goal. We should acknowledge that despite the many chances that we had, West Brom did have a fairly presentable chance themselves just before we scored. I feel like it's one of those where I would have had an issue with the referee had that goal gone in, because there were a couple of fouls on Arsenal players. There was one towards the edge of the box and the ref played on and we lost the ball, or Xhaka got fouled. And I think it was one of those where, you know, when Xhaka does his thing where he stands in front of the ball between the man and then goes and falls over. And most of the time he gets a free kick. This time he didn't, but I thought the one previous to that was a definite free kick. So I would have had a bit of an issue with Martin Atkinson there.
Yeah. Can I just say on that, by the way, West Brom did have a couple of chances in this game, but something that I sort of... Listen, and they might have taken them and it might have changed my perspective, so I have to offer that caveat, but I sort of can make my peace with it simply because by the time West Brom had that chance, I think it was 20 minutes into the game, Arsenal had already had sort of three or four pretty decent opportunities. And I just sort of feel that if there is a bit of a trade-off there, then it kind of is one worth making because we were at least being aggressive and assertive and trying to win the game, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it comes back to the fine margins, doesn't it? If that goal goes in for West Brom, what does it do to our confidence and how we play? And then, of course, you know, we're not a team or we haven't been a team that has created a lot of chances. So let's say you go through a 20, 25-minute period and you make a lot of chances, you don't score, and then the opposition scores. It's like, okay, can you recover from that? You know, the worry is if you can sustain that kind of performance level, which we did, I think, throughout this game. And that, for me, is one of the very pleasing and encouraging things. But let's talk about Kieran Tierney then and you know, what he was doing on the left-hand side. You know, the 91st minute or 92nd minute, there was a break, and all of a sudden, there's Kieran Tierney bombing up the left-hand side. It's 4-0 to Arsenal. You could forgive him for, you know, just sitting back and catching a breather and what have you, but I just don't know that is in his DNA. The goal he scored, it's a very different kind of a goal in very different circumstances, but it reminded me a little bit of... Remember Bakary Sagna's header against Tottenham?
Yeah.
Do you remember that one where it was like we were 2-0 down and it was like, fuck, we really need somebody to produce something to sort of give us the momentum to get back into this game, which of course we did, and we won 5-2 in that game. This felt a little bit like that to me in that we'd had the chances. We hadn't been able to convert. Aubameyang wasn't quite sharp enough to get on the end of the Saka thing. And, you know, the keeper had made a couple of saves. I think they were relatively routine. But it was like, okay, we've had this spell. It hasn't gone in. We need somebody to produce something. I mean, the push and run beyond the fullback, it was like schoolyard stuff, wasn't it? You don't really see that happen effectively anyway at Premier League level, unless there's somebody who knocks it way beyond the defender and has got the pace to, you know, like a Walcott just sticking it beyond the defender and going past him in his very youthful, zippy prime. But, you know, to do that, to cut inside, to finish with his right foot, I mean, what can you say other than...
Magnifique! It was a sensational goal and a brilliant contribution from a guy who I just think has got the bit between his teeth at the moment. And we know that the manager and Tierney have a really good relationship. You know, Arteta was really positive about Tierney before he'd even played a game for him. I think immediately impressed him with his attitude. And I think everything you listen to Tierney saying publicly suggests that that's reciprocal. He really rates Arteta. He's really... high on him. And I think in the last few games, he has absolutely stepped up and been one of the leaders of this team. And this was when he drove into the penalty area in that way. He has got that little push and run trick, and he has done it quite a few times already. He reminded me of the Chelsea incident where he got the penalty, and I was thinking, oh, here we go. You know, are they going to trip him up? And I have to admit, I almost sort of thought, well, I hope that happens because I don't know what else Tierney's necessarily got in his locker at this point. But he... Yeah, he found something. And I mean, he did you notice after the goal, he was almost kind of overcome. He sort of seemed like in a trance-like state almost as they kind of all surrounded him.
That's right, I think I used that in the picture. I noticed it in the celebration. I used that in the picture when I was looking for the questions where he kind of, you know, is giving it so much that he just, you know, relaxes for a little bit, has a quick sit down to catch his breath on the cold, snowy night at the Hawthorns. Yeah, I mean, I think... You know, he's a high energy guy, and he's obviously got amazing powers of recovery in that he can give you these incredible bursts of energy, and then he can get back up and down the pitch and just repeat it for 90 minutes. I think that was, you know, between doing what he did for the goal and then celebrating with the vigor with which he celebrated. I mean, he really got into that celebration, didn't he? It was like, yeah, come on. I just relax here for like 5 seconds and then I'll be ready to go again.
I think he was sort of lost in the moment. And, yeah, somebody said in his post-match interview, he was asked, was it a shot or a cross? And he said, I need to watch it back, which kind of, to me suggests he almost sort of, you know, it was kind of an out-of-body experience for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was taking the piss where he's going, the lads are saying it was a cross, you know? but, you know, look, he meant it. He absolutely meant that.
Oh,
no
doubt.
Question, you know?
No doubt at all. But I just, I'm sort of fascinated by, like, the degree to which he kind of... yeah, kind of went beyond the realms of his what seems his responsibility. You know, the degree to which he stepped up and made this happen. It's a goal of individual brilliance and individual skill. And how many times this season have we said that this team's been crying out for something like that?
Yeah, for sure. And look, you can really see why Arteta is enamoured with him as a player and with him as a character. You know, I don't want to go like... You know, if we had 11 Kieran Tierneys, we'd be top of the league right now. But there are players who have a certain character which are really important in teams. And I think if you're a manager, you can appreciate greatly. And if you're a fan, you can also really appreciate. I think we said this on the last podcast, didn't we, after the Chelsea game, that Tierney, while we were all celebrating, and rightly so, the win over Chelsea, Tierney came out and his first comment was, it's a start.
Yeah.
It's a start. And I think similarly after this game, he wasn't getting carried away. He scored a brilliant goal. He was probably our best player on the night, certainly up there with Bukayo Saka. But again, he's not getting carried away. There's a feet on the ground element to him, which I think is really, really important. And probably transmits itself in some way to other players in the squad, which I think can be crucial as well. So there's just so much to like about him, the way he plays. There's an honesty, like he's, I think we said it before, he's like an old-fashioned professional footballer, if you like, and in an era where, and this isn't to be critical of anybody, you know, there are personalities, right? There are a lot of personalities in there. There are our exposure to footballers via social media, et cetera, allows us to see perhaps more of player personalities than we might care to at times. But there isn't enough of Kieran Tierney to go around, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. He's kind of unique, seemingly, in his ordinariness, and I mean that in the best possible way. He just seems like a very relatable guy, and you're right, it's fantastic for a manager to have someone like that, but it is fantastic for fans too. You know, we all love a cult hero, and I think stuff like him refusing to wear a long sleeve shirt and stuff like that, I mean, listen, it doesn't influence his performance at all. Well, clearly not, but it's good fun as a supporter, you know, and it's I have to sort of... You do kind of enjoy having a character like that within the squad.
For sure. I did enjoy this on Twitter from Neil Heffernan, who's at HefD Gooner, who said to us, the question is, could Kieran Tierney do it on a warm, sunny day in London?
Well, yeah, we'll find out eventually. Yeah, find out at the Emirates Cup sometime. But I should mention, I was just speaking to Amy Lawrence this morning, and she made a really interesting point about, you know, this is a squad that's quite shy on players who are in that kind of prime age range, you know, sort of. And Tierney's young. He's at the outset of that. How old is he? 22,
23,
maybe?
23.
So I'm talking sort of between 23 and 27. Arsenal don't have too many players in that category. And he is certainly one. And although he's one of the younger players in experience terms, you know, he's a long way ahead of, you know, someone like Ainsley Maitland-Niles or something like that. And I think those prime players are really important. And, it's nice for Arteta to have a name that he's like, you know, in the next 5 years, Kieran Tierney's one of my guys.
Yeah,
you know?
for sure. Okay. The second goal.
Which did you prefer? That's the obvious question.
I loved everything about Tierney's goal. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. And I love him. But I preferred the second goal because I think it's the kind of football that we associate with Arsenal and have associated with Arsenal for a long time. And we haven't seen anywhere near enough of it. And the fact that it was fashioned by two Haaland Academy guys, the movement, the sharpness. I think the pass from Lacazette is superb around the corner to Smith Rowe. I think the touch with the outside of his left foot from Smith Rowe as he's taking that pass from Lacazette is just impeccable. The movement from Saka, the movement from those guys. I mean, it's everything you want to see from your football team. It really is. You know, and I think what was funny about funny, maybe not funny, but I had the TV on because I was doing the player ratings and stuff like that, and I don't tend to watch a lot of the post-match stuff, and I certainly don't tend to watch the post-match stuff of the opposition, particularly when it's Sam Allardyce. But it was on, and I was just sort of soaking up a bit of his misery, you know? And he said, look, something along the lines of, it showed what happens when we try and open up. You know, we didn't do it against Liverpool. We got a 1-1 draw. And, you know, if we open up, we've got spaces that can be exploited. Or, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. They didn't open up.
No.
They didn't open up. We opened them up. There's a clear distinction there. And that goal was just, it was phenomenal. Superb. It was quick. It was fast. It was pacey. It was precise. It was technically brilliant. And it looks like all or many of the best goals like that, it looks so simple, but it's not. I loved it.
I loved it too. And I have to say, we did open them up. I think it comes from a throw-in, actually, which Hector Bellerin takes. I think he's like 30 yards from his own goal. And we've given a bit of praise to one fullback, but I want to give some praise to Hector Bellerin because he opens up West Brom. I mean, he receives the ball from Sabas in the right-back spot, dribbles in field, and he carries the ball, you know, 25 yards, something like that. But it just changes the shape for West Brom defensively. It just shifts the pattern. And it's something he's done actually really well, I think, this season, is dribble the ball, commit opponents, you know, drive in field, drive up the field.
That diagonal inside run that he makes from the right-back position into midfield or, you know, I agree with you there.
And I think, you know, sometimes because it happens deeper on the pitch, it doesn't get as much notice. Obviously, once we get into our half, it is kind of magical, isn't it? And listen, maybe it's just because we're Arsenal fans, but that does feel like an Arsenal goal to me. That's the kind of football I associate with the best Arsenal teams that I've watched. And, yeah, it just was kind of... It was kind of a surreal thing to see that goal because it was like, oh, yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah. It was, glorious. And, you know, to have the young players involved in it was fantastic as well.
And maybe no coincidence. You know, I do kind of think, you know, although they're sort of recent graduates, Bukayo Saka and Emil Smith Rowe, they did come through Hale End and the academy predominantly in an era where the agenda at the top of the football club was being set by Arsene Wenger and where the aim was for the academy players to play a style of football and a system that would educate them about the capability to play for his first team. And so I think it's inevitable that some of that natural understanding, some of that style kind of is imbued in these guys. And yeah, it's an interesting thing. I was kind of thinking about the goal and to what extent is that coaching? To what extent is that just instinct? And how are those instincts forged? I do think it was a real credit to the academy, the way those two players performed on the day and that goal in particular.
Yeah, look, they're very exciting young talents who have made a real impact. And the reason why they have improved this team is because of their quality, you know? Yeah. They may have all the energy and enthusiasm in the world, but, you know, it's as much or certainly more down to do with their quality and their technical ability and everything else. What about the second half then? West Brom had the ball in the back of the net. Offside, so no real worries there. We made quite an early change, which I thought was interesting, in that we brought Maitland-Niles on for Hector Bellerin, who'd been on a yellow card. I mean, do you think that was just purely down to the booking?
I don't know. It was a really early change. And now you say that, actually, I remember on the television they talked about there being an injury problem, but I haven't heard anything subsequently related to that. Right. You?
No, I haven't. I didn't notice that in the commentary if they talked about an injury. I just figured that given that he was on a yellow card and we have had some issues with discipline, not that I think Bellerin is an ill-disciplined player or anything like that, but in the tricky conditions, maybe one slip and you make a bad challenge, or it looks like a bad challenge. Martin Atkinson doesn't need a great deal of encouragement to send off an Arsenal player, so no. I just figured it was tactical. So, you know, following on the withdrawal of Saka the other day, I'm wondering, is it like more common sense being applied to our in-game management by Mikel Arteta?
Yeah, perhaps so. I think it was. If so, that was sensible. You know, we've lost so many players, like you say. Mm. I did slightly worry, I must admit, at the start, outset of the second half, because of the offside goal. That was a slight, although I thought it was off, it was a slight heart in mouth moment. And, you know, West Brom changed it. They brought Charlie Austin on, who's got a bit of previous with us as well. So, you know, I did have some concerns about if we were going to assert the same degree of control, but fortunately, we scored on around the hour mark. Was it two goals in the space of about 5 minutes? And they just absolutely killed the game.
Well, yeah. I mean, we did have a chance as well before we scored the goal. I think Danny Ceballos set up Lacazette for a really good chance. Keeper did well to stand up to it, I think. But it was a good pass from Ceballos. And I think Ceballos had a decent, really decent second half.
He had a better second half for sure. Yeah. I thought he grew into the game.
Yeah. Did you notice his celebration for the third goal?
Yeah, well, was it the classics of our sort of
on his
on
knees?
His knees.
Yeah, as if this is the greatest thing that he's ever seen. Arsenal scoring a third goal against West Brom. there's a career in Hollywood for him, I think. Afterwards, I mean, the goal itself is quite interesting because it comes from what I think was a poor pass from Pablo Marie looking for Aubameyang, and I think I remarked at the time that, or maybe I didn't remark, but I certainly thought about it, is that his long passing isn't quite there, you know. I've got a question about him for the second half, so I'll keep it. But, right. You know, the defender made a mistake. Aubameyang was there to capitalize on the mistake, and we set the ball
going.
Yeah,
he does well, actually, Aubameyang, to win possession.
What did you make of Aubameyang's overall performance? Because I don't want to go too big on this. I thought it was, there were encouraging signs in there. You know, I think the idea that his body language shows he doesn't care is not quite right. I don't think your body language, you're not frustrated if you don't care.
No, that's fair. I think he looked desperate to score. Yeah. That's really what I think. Yeah. And you could see it in him, especially as we entered the last 20 minutes of the game. Every time he got the ball, he was looking for the give and go. He was looking to open his body and try and find an angle for a shot. Mm. He had three shots in the game. He was involved. But the ones that stick out to me are the ones where he didn't make contact. You know, that one where Saka whipped it in. He almost got the touch. Even on the third goal, you know, Saka crosses it and the West Brom defender gets there, clatters it against his own post. But if he doesn't, Aubameyang probably puts that away. I was actually more encouraged by his performance in this game than I have been by some of his other more recent ones.
I agree.
And granted, this was in a very good attacking display from Arsenal, so that's kind of inevitable. Yeah. But
I just don't get the accusations that he doesn't care anymore. I don't really understand it. You know, he celebrated all the goals with great glee and with his teammates. I think he's just desperate for a goal. You know, this is a guy who's used to scoring dozens of goals a season, and he's on five, and we're in January. You know, so this is a difficult period for him. There's no question about that. But I don't see a player who doesn't care.
And he hasn't had a situation quite like this in his career for a very long time, I would say, in terms of his goal output. I mean, certainly not in his last few years at Dortmund. Mm. Certainly not at Arsenal. And I think he looks less happy than he has done.
Yeah, but he's a striker and he's not scoring goals. What's to be happy about? Just looking at the goal again, it goes back to what we were talking about with Saka. Right-footed cross.
Yeah,
went outside the defender, Semi Ajayi, who used to play for Arsenal or was certainly in our academy. Clatters it off his own post. Mad they ended up with two central defenders who used to play for us as well, because Kyle Bartley
came on. Yeah.
Came on. Look, Smith Rowe there.
And Kieran Gibbs on the bench.
Gibbs on the bench, sure.
This is what happens if you buy Arsenal defenders, guys. It doesn't end well. But I shouldn't be saying that in January while the fire sale's on. But I felt a bit sorry for Smith Rowe because he makes great contact with it. He can't really do much more, can he?
No.
But it's straight at Ajay's stomach, and then Lacazette's there to tuck it away.
It's good finish.
And at that point,
guided it well.
Yeah, it is. And he deserved that at that point because he had a very good game, and it looked like he might not get the goal to crown it. Fortunately, he got this one, and there was another one.
There was another one as well. Yeah, I mean, the Tierney cross from the left-hand side, Aubameyang involved in that goal because he played the ball outside to Tierney. So, you know, a Hlebian pre-assist for Aubameyang, that will boost his confidence. I mean, he clatters the cross in, and like I said, only needs to touch it, doesn't he, to make it a goal.
Yeah, that was one that I sort of thought, that feels a bit VAR-y. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I don't think I quite celebrated that. I was a bit like Lacazette looking at the line.
He did look straight across, didn't he?
But, you know, it was okay. We got the goal. And yeah, credit to Tierney. And it's interesting, you know, you look at the third and fourth goal. Aubameyang does have a role in them. It's not the role you would anticipate. He's not the guy getting on the end of it in the box, but he has been involved in the build-up. And I think that speaks to a slightly better performance from them than what we've seen in recent weeks. But what a turnaround for Lacazette. I mean, 5 goals in 4 games now.
Yeah, 4 goals in his last 3 Premier League games as well, because it was, you know, the one goal in the EFL Cup, it's a goal. You can't take it away from him. But I think the important goals are the ones that he's scoring in the Premier League. And look, he has been subject to fairly heavy analysis and perhaps criticism on this podcast, along with other players. So, when he's done it in the last few games, credit to him. It's good to see, because goals have been a problem. And if one of our strikers is in some kind of form, that can only be a good thing for the team. I mean, I think there are reasons why it's working a bit better for him, in that he's playing closer to the opposition box. He's not having to do the job of a defensive midfielder at times. So there are reasons why things are looking better for him.
Yeah. Absolutely. But again, as well, Tierney on the overlap. I mean, Tierney does play that kind of hybrid left centre-back, full-back role very, very well. And he does it for Scotland too. But I do think we're seeing the benefits now of kind of taking the shackles off him slightly and just giving him that licence to really attack and get to the byline. I mean, fantastic as well to see Arsenal score 4 goals. I think I'm right in saying it's only the second time we've done it under Arteta in the league.
Third time.
Our third, is it?
Yeah, because we beat Newcastle 4-0, didn't we? And there was a game against Norwich after the restart that we won 4-0. But it certainly matches our best result under Arteta.
First time we've done it in 2021, let's say that.
Yeah, at least. Well, look, you know, I think one of the aspects of this as well that's important is the clean sheet. You know, it is great to see a score 4 goals and to sort of finally get ourselves a positive goal difference. But a clean sheet is good as well, you know. You know, in 2 away games, when we looked at them, we thought these could be really quite tricky. You know, given our record against Brighton, we haven't really done very well there in the past. Given the Sam Allardyce aspect to this game against West Brom, you know, you could be forgiven, particularly the form we were in, of looking at those and going, These could be tricky. And, we've won them both. I think we deserve to win against Brighton, and I think we obviously deserve to win against West Brom. It's a great turnaround. And just what the doctor ordered, if you like. Footballing morphine.
Absolutely. And the confidence in the team is really transformed, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and you see that all over the pitch. You see it in the smallest things, in the first touches, in the passing, in the kind of scanning that players are doing. And you see it, I think, after the game, and, you know, when they celebrate, there's just a weight off their shoulders. And thank goodness.
Thank goodness for that. Yeah, okay. Well, look, I don't know what else there is to say about this particular game. what more it needs other than it's a really good win. And, you know, our position in the league table is looking a lot brighter than it was. So unless there's anything else or anything else from the weekend of football that you want to comment on, we could go into part two.
Yeah, I think let's get into part two and get amongst those questions.
Yeah, some good questions because there's a lot going on and things that we can chat about. So we'll deal with those right after this.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. Also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. James, as it's the new year, I'll give you the choice of whether you want to go first or not.
I'll go first.
Okay.
This question is from the Discord. It's from Fergus Zapata. And Fergus says, our recent success is largely attributed to the young players, Emil Smith-Rowe, Saka, Tierney, Martinelli, and they do seem to have made a difference as to how we connect different parts of the pitch. Mm. But is this down to them actually getting Arteta's system and playing the way he's wanted all along? Or has he just been lucky that they've turned up and formed good partnerships?
I mean, I think the timing of their availability has been, can you say it's good fortune if you've missed them all season? Because that could be seen as bad luck as well, couldn't it?
Isn't it also, apart from their availability, isn't it also in part down to the unavailability of certain others, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's true. I mean, there was, I mean, the only one who was really unavailable was Willian, right?
That's sort of kind of Aubameyang as well.
Oh yeah,
was out for a bit.
Right. Like, I understand persisting with Aubameyang. I don't know how long you could persist with someone like Willian before you have to make a change anyway, whether he's available or not. You know, look, I think we talked about this a bit in the first half, where perhaps, and I think it's a big perhaps, no, a small perhaps, rather, some of the changes were enforced to an extent. Like, his hand was forced. He didn't really have a great deal of choice. He had to do something. So there is an element of perhaps good fortune to it. I don't know how much this is down to them getting Arteta's system, because it feels to me a little bit like the football we've been playing of late is different from what we've done most of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
is it that he feels he can only do that with the players that he's had available to him in the last little while? Is there no way we could have done what we've done in the last three games at different points in the season with different personnel, you know? But I suppose when you go through a run like we've been on and you don't change it, you know, then you don't deserve any credit whatsoever. If you change it, whether it's enforced or otherwise, and it works, I think you get some more goodwill in the bank, you know? I just wonder how much of it is down to look, we've tried this, it isn't working, we've got to do something different, and at the same time, we've got some players available to us who haven't been available throughout this season, like Martinelli, like Smith Rowe, who, you know, have been coming back from injury. I think there is an element of good fortune to it, but I think that's true of most managers, or all managers at some point get a bit of a lucky break along the way. They stumble across something that works and then they stick with it. So,
yeah, I think trial and error is part of management. And I think there is fortune in how this has come together. I don't think if you sat Mikel Arteta down a month ago and said, your team's going to be Saka on the right, Smith Rowe as number 10, you know, I don't think he would be like, yes, that's the plan, necessarily. I heard Tim Stillman talk about this, saying that sometimes the skill of the manager is being able to sort of sense which way the wind is blowing, and when you do land upon something, being able to invest in that and commit to it. And Arteta has at least shown a willingness to, when something has worked, kind of sticking with it and putting his faith in that.
I mean, some people would say that, you know, he was also as obstinate when things weren't working. He stuck with things when they weren't working much longer than he should have, you know. So, yeah.
I do think personally, and I'm sort of a fan of his, but I do think he's got quite lucky with the way that this has happened with Smith Rowe in particular. But it's happened now, and, you know, he at least seems to have embraced that. I think what happens in the January transfer window will be very telling, because I think that will tell us a lot about what he thinks about this as kind of a long-term strategy, you know, the degree to which he sees this as just kind of an emergency solution or as the solution.
Yeah. What does happen in the window will be interesting, which brings us to this question from Queen Gunnar at SoFar, who says, apparently we were going for Isco, but due to Smith Rowe's form, we have abandoned those plans. Do you think this is wise, or should we still pursue a number 10, not necessarily Isco, but a player like him?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much Arsenal were ever into after Isco, personally. I'm not convinced by that. But I do think Arsenal should still be pursuing a player of that type in the January transfer window, even if it is a loan deal. Maybe it's cautious of me, but I just have concerns as to whether... Actually, I don't think that is cautious. I think it's realistic to think Smith Rowe can't play all these games, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot to put on a young player who is, 20 years of age, who we all look at and think, yes, this is a really talented young player here. But for him to go from sort of zero to the creative hub of the team for the rest of this season doesn't really feel realistic to me. And even if it was realistic, even if he became that player and stayed fit, and I really do hope he stays fit and becomes hugely important, when you have a player like that, you need some kind of backup, right?
Of course.
If he's gone, it's so fundamentally impacts the way you play that you're going to struggle without him. So you can't become reliant. So, I mean, I think you're right. It's realistic to think that even if Smith Rowe can step up and become more influential, another one of those players will be important.
Yeah, and actually, you know, although I've got my doubts about the seriousness of the interest, you know, Isco in theory, you know, that's not a deal that I hate, a six-month loan for a player like that. You know, someone who's experienced, granted he's not been in the best form of late, but, you know, he has played at a high level. He's got lots of technical ability. He could fit into that system and alternate or rotate with Smith Rowe. I think it is a difficult decision for Arsenal in a difficult market. I think they should be very wary of committing to a signing, a permanent signing, I mean, if they're not convinced of that player.
100%. We should not do it. We should not spend any significant amount of money on a player unless we are absolutely positive that he is going to be the right player and that he is a player of the right profile. And I mean that in terms of his age. I think it's hugely important now that when we make permanent signings, we're making signings that could, you know, obviously you want them to improve the team, but you can't keep sinking money into players who will get you nothing back. You know, Willian is one, Cedric is another, who you're never really going to make any money back on, even though they are ostensibly free signings. They're not free, you know, when you add up what you're paying their wages and signing on fees over the course of their contracts and everything else. So, you know, and they're hard to move. Players over 30 are hard to move, particularly when they're on good contracts. It's much easier to sell a player who's in his prime, as you say, in their mid-20s, maybe a couple of years left on their contract, et cetera, et cetera. So I think when it comes to our recruitment, permanent recruitment, that's the way we've got to be looking.
Yeah, absolutely. And even so, like I'm trying to think through in my mind and figure out, is there a way Arsenal can get round this problem without making a signing? You know, is there a case that if you didn't want to play Smith Rowe at number 10, you know, you could rotate Saka into that position and bring in one of the right wingers who's costing you a lot of money and that you're not using? Or I don't know. I'm just thinking, is there another solution?
Well, I mean, I can hear people listening to this thinking that there is an internal solution.
Yeah, of course.
In the shape of Mesut Ozil. But, you know, I don't even know if that's worth discussing. Not because he isn't somebody who could do a job there. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal will be in an interesting position if they can move enough players on that they have spare spots left in the squad. That will be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that's how any potential return could be, what's the word, wrapped up, I think, in a nice bit of glossy paper? Because you might say, if Arteta brings Ozil back in the second half of the season, it kind of undermines the decision that he made in the first place.
For sure, yeah, potentially.
But if you were to say, well, look, now we've got space. Now we can accommodate him, et cetera, et cetera.
I think where it becomes very difficult is, let's say Arsenal do shift a couple more players. Let's say they lose, Kolasinac is gone. He was registered, obviously. Let's say they can move a Mustafi or somebody like that.
Sokratis
is a bit different because he wasn't registered. But yeah, let's say they can move another registered player on. Or even as things stand, they've got one spot free.
Well, no, we don't. We've just got one less. Oh, we do, yeah. We can bring
Kolasinac's spot free. Yeah, where that becomes difficult is if you come the end of January are like, we do actually have the spots free to register these players that we're paying money to play for us, but we're not going to do that. I mean, that's, I think, politically a very tricky move. So then you suddenly, but then you open up all these, the can of worms of the selection question, you know?
Yeah.
So that will be, I mean, Arsenal, I can imagine Edu and Arteta, like on the final day, a bid comes in for Mustafi. And it's like Sophie's choice. They're like, well, obviously it'd be great to sell Mustafi, but that means we'll have to do this thing that we don't want to do. I don't know. It's a genuinely interesting one. But, and you know, the Ozil case is, well, you've got a player there who is very experienced, who can play in that position, who could potentially provide, at worst, you know, rotation and cover option for someone like Emile Smith Rowe.
Yeah.
personally, I have real doubts over whether Ozil can still do what Emil Smith-Rowe is doing. And I'm not saying that because I think Emil Smith-Rowe is a better player than Mesut Ozil, but if you look at the sprints that Emil Smith-Rowe is making, I think he led Arsenal for sprints in the game against West Brom. The intensity at which he's playing, the defensive work he's doing, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Ozil can replicate that. But
well, yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, he hasn't played now for over 9 months, Mesut Ozil. He hasn't played a game of competitive football for over 9 months.
Yeah.
If you were to say to somebody, let's imagine he's not our player, and if you were to say to somebody, right, what we're going to do in the January window is bring in a... How old is Mesut Ozil? 31? Or 30?
I think maybe 30. No, he's older than 30, I would say.
He's 32.
32.
So we're going to bring in a 32-year-old...
Who hasn't... it didn't go very well.
Exactly. Who hasn't played a game of competitive football for over 9 months. You get to the end of the January window, it's 10 months.
Yeah, so let's say you register him at the end of January... You probably need to give him some games behind closed doors after that point, you know, with the 23s. There's work to be done.
Yeah. I mean, we...
Let's not forget, we signed a guy with a broken back on deadline day in January, so nothing is beyond us.
Nothing is impossible. I mean, we did something similar with Denis Suarez in that we signed a player on loan in January looking for him to make an immediate impact. That's why we signed, you know, that player on loan. But he played about three games for Barcelona,
I mean,
all season.
That the January transfer window is basically a bit crap. Like, have we ever bought someone in January and it been good?
Reyes.
Yeah. But that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, Arshavin did.
Arshavin was. He was very good pretty quickly.
Adebayor, Diaby.
Walcott, yeah. Walcott didn't play for the first 6 months. But yeah. I suppose what I mean is it's such a compromised opportunity to buy.
It's not the window in which you make the signings that are really part of your long-term strategy unless, you know, you've properly identified the player and you're able to take them away from the club that they're at, you know, where they're probably contributing to a season, whether it's trying to go for promotion or avoid relegation or whatever it is. If they're a good player, they're important to the team that they're playing for. So it's difficult to get them away in January. So you either really heavily invest in them or whatever it is. So,
yeah, I mean, like, you know, we're talking off air about Buendia, but, you know, he is in the midst of a promotion battle with Norwich that could earn them hundreds of millions of pounds for them to get into the Premier League. So to sell the player at this point, you've got to put down an awful lot of money to make that something they contemplate.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a very, very difficult time to do good business. And it's not, in recent history, it's not one in which we've done much good business at all, you know. So I'm not... I do think Arsenal, in answer to the original question, I do think Arsenal should be pursuing a creative attacking midfield player. But I also think they must be very careful not to commit to anything that's not right.
Right.
Shall I have another question?
Sure.
There are lots of questions about centre-backs and who should play. So Reese on Twitter, AFC Reese, is withholding Marie seemingly forming a good partnership and Gabriel being our best defender in a long time, would you keep the back line the same or would you swap out either Holding or Marie for Gabriel?
I think I would bring Gabriel back in for Pablo Marie. I think we had a question here as well. Let me see if I can find it. It was on Twitter. It's from Robinho, who's at Musketeer Robbie. He says, are we jumping the gun a little early with praise for Pablo Marie? He's done well against Brighton and West Brom, but both sides threatened little up front. He had a couple of dodgy moments against Chelsea. Do you keep him in or bring Gabriel back alongside Holding? Look, I still think sample size on Pablo Marie is quite small, but he's done well. He's been part of a back four that's kept two clean sheets in our last three games. We've won our last three games. So, you know, everybody's played their part in that. I think he's shown he can, you know, become a good squad player. I feel like Gabriel is the player with the higher ceiling, though. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's like, maybe it's not quite the same as this. I was going to say it's a bit like sort of Nketiah coming in and scoring a couple of goals, and then you bring Aubameyang back. It's not quite that yet, obviously, because Gabriel hasn't had that kind of impact. But my gut feeling would tell me that Gabriel comes back in. What about you?
It's really. I do think that is a tricky one. I think Pablo Marie's done pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to go overboard, but I think he's looked absolutely fine. I think I probably would bring Gabriel back in. I think, you know, if you look at the money that was invested in him, I think he is clearly the first choice player. I think he's the guy for the future. Yes, he's young, so you could argue he could bide his time. Marie was injured when the season started. But I think what we've seen of Gabriel, I would edge towards him. I mean, but credit to Pablo Marie. I mean, I think he's shown that he can be a very capable backup player, but I think that is exactly what he is.
And there's nothing wrong with that either.
We need that.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, it's really helpful to have a sort of analogous player to come in and play as a left-footed centre-back that doesn't disrupt our build-up play or our shape too much. You know, some similar qualities. He's similarly tall. He's decent in the air. But I think he doesn't have the athleticism and the power that Gabriel has. And I do think in the Premier League that that's a really valuable asset.
Well, go on. Sorry, have you got another one?
Well, I had a question about Rob Holding, actually.
Yeah.
Arsenal Biscuit said, is Rob Holding underappreciated? I think he's been outstanding. Team defensive stats are good. He's the constant in there, and he's had multiple centre-backs to work with. He's not a glamorous defender, but I see him as the long-term solution at right centre-back. Am I wrong?
I think Holding has been better than he's had credit for.
It's difficult to think of a big mistake he's made.
No,
I have to say.
No, that's true. Is he the long-term solution for right centre-back? I'm not 100% sure there, because I always felt like his best performances came as the left-sided centre-half. Certainly under Unai Emery, where he had that decent run of form, his best performances came as the left-sided centre-half. I think what you've got to do is give him credit for his availability, at least. Mm. You know, he's been there every game. It's been a pretty tough period. He's done 90 minutes week after week, game after game. I think if you were to ask this question before our three wins, the answers might be quite different from people. But I think he's done pretty well. I mean, we had one here on the Discord as well from Gareth's, who says Rob Holding has been excellent this season, is only 25. Are you surprised to see people saying that he doesn't deserve a new contract? It's a no-brainer for me. And this is on the back of reports that he was being offered a new long-term contract at Arsenal. His current deal runs until 2023. So we're at that point where it's, you know, 2 years or bust. And it looks like they're going to give him the extra years. I mean, what do you make of that?
Yeah, some people have been quite wound up about that. Personally, I don't really have an issue with us giving new contracts to English players, British players. And the reason is, I think they'll always be saleable assets. And I think I think that's going to go up. You know, with Brexit, I think that British players are going to have even more of a premium attached to them.
How funny was it, Sam Allardyce, Brexit voter, complaining that Brexit has scuppered 3 or 4 transfer deals? I mean, anyway, let's not.
Very funny, but very sad as well. But yeah, I think consequently, because the sort of qualification criteria for players from abroad are quite complex, quite difficult, I think homegrown players are going to become even more expensive. So if Arsenal sign Rob Holding to a longer contract, it doesn't preclude them selling him in
2 years or 3 years' time.
2 years or 3 years, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it just ensures that we'll get a very good return on that investment, you know.
He'd still only be 28, you know, and you could, you know, we paid 2 million for Rob Holding. Whatever happens in the next few years, you know, we're going to get more than that when we sell him. So
especially after his season that he's had, you know, the fact he's been a regular starter for Arsenal. So, yeah, I wouldn't make it Arsenal's immediate priority. I don't think it's top of their list, but it's not something that will annoy me. And I think he has done well, actually. I think he was almost out the door in the summer. He was, you know, due to go to Newcastle on loan, and he stayed fit. He's been competent. He hasn't, like I say, made any obvious errors. I think there are limitations to his game, but I think within those, he's performed pretty well. And I think Arteta seems to have developed some trust in him. And I don't know if I would agree with the question, think he's the natural long-term solution as the right-sided centre-half. But could he be the Pablo Marie of that position? Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think the club are, as you guys have reported in The Athletic more than once, they are pursuing, or not pursuing, but actively looking for a right-sided centre-back. So, yeah, it might well be that that's the role that he's earmarked for. And I think if that's what it is, then it makes sense to give him a new deal. You know, we're not going to give Rob Holding a, you know, 200 grand a week deal or anything like that either. You know, let's be realistic. He's an asset, particularly in the market after Brexit. He's English. He's an uncomplicated purchase for another English club at some point. So,
yeah. You know. And also, you've got to think about how these things have come about. You know, Rob Holding was looking at a loan move in the summer. He's played practically every game for Arsenal in this season, and his agent will probably be knocking on the door saying, well, you're paying my guy X, but he plays for you every single week. You know, so the club may enter into those talks as a consequence of that, but, you know, who knows how and when that will be resolved.
Speaking of right-sided centre-halves, we had many questions about this particular issue. William Saliba has gone to Nice on loan, or is going. It's yet to be confirmed, but it is going to happen as far as we know. So Sam at SK_Arsenal says, with the news breaking that Saliba is off to Nice on loan, I have an awful feeling we may never see him return to Arsenal in any other capacity than to clear out his under 23 locker before an inevitable permanent move to Milan. Please tell me I'm wrong. And who else did we have on this one? Peter Hoost says, happy and goodly new year, gents. To the best of your knowledge and understanding, could you please explain the situation around Saliba? And there were many questions about, you know, Saliba, is this the end for him? What does it mean? And so on and so forth. So away with you. Let's have it.
Well, the messaging from the club, and I'm sure people will have read it in the various reports that have come out this morning, is this is a loan deal. There is no permanent clause. Saliba is part of Arsenal's future. All I could say is I'm fascinated to see how he gets on.
Yeah.
You know, you would imagine that he's not signed for Nice, without some sort of a, if not agreement, but assurance that he's going to play football. You know, Nice have got a game in midweek. Obviously, he's not going to be ready for that. But within a couple of weeks, you'll think we'd be seeing him in Liga. And while that league has not always shown itself to be the high standard, if you look at some of the players we've bought from there in the past, I am fascinated to see how he does, because I do think there's a player there, and I am bemused. I must say, I am struggling to figure out exactly what's gone on here and how he's been so
is the mistake here from Arsenal's point of view, does it boil down to the fact that we fucked up the paperwork to send him back out on loan this season? I mean, I think you can ask all kinds of questions about how it is that a club like Arsenal have spent £28 million on an 18-year-old who will now go 2 years without even appearing, making a first-team appearance for us. You know, when it comes to resources and what we have available to us in the transfer market, I think it's perfectly reasonable to ask if that was the best way we could have used £28 million, particularly, you know, when we were playing players like Mustafi and David Luiz and everything else. This was an area of the pitch which really could have used proper investment in a player who could come in and do a job for us, right? And that's not to be critical of Saliba or anything like that. My gut feeling on this has always been that it's to do with how ready he is. And I know people bring up Fofana at Leicester, and that's a fair point. But there aren't a great many 19-year-old centre-halves doing it week in, week out in the Premier League. So the issue isn't so much that we were willing to send him on loan, is that we didn't get the loan done. Would we still be talking in such conspiratorial terms if they'd been able to just sort out the paperwork? He goes back to Saint-Étienne on loan for the season, and he develops again with a season of first-team football at Arsenal. You can make the case, of course, that he's capable of playing against Dundalk and Molde and Rapid Vienna in the Europa League. I think that was a big mistake as well, that if we couldn't get the loan deal done, we should have had him in the Europa League squad. You know, that's a mistake. But I don't think it's unreasonable to think that a 19-year-old is going to, you know, find it difficult at Premier League level. A 19-year-old centre-half who, if he makes a few mistakes, is going to get slaughtered, you know? So,
yeah, I think it's pretty catastrophic, isn't it, that they messed up the loan?
I think it was ridiculous.
Awful for the player. I think Saint-Étienne as a club, I know that they were very, very unhappy about it. I'm sure Saliba himself was pretty unhappy. And it's done a huge amount of damage to the player and his progression. We just got to hope that it's not an insurmountable amount of damage. And Arsenal, I guess, will be watching him. You know, they've got a loan manager. It would be detailed to do that. I hope Arteta and his staff watch him too. And I hope he does really well. I mean, he's had a really hard 6 months since coming over to England. In trying circumstances. And yeah, I think he'll be delighted to probably A, be back in France, but B, be back playing. I mean, what do you think about him going to France? Would you rather have seen him join a Premier League side? I'm not sure many Premier League sides would have given him the football or taken a gamble on a guy who's not played a Premier League game.
Were there any offers from Premier League clubs? I'm not sure.
Like,
if you're a club down the bottom of the league and you're scrapping against relegation, are you bringing in a 19-year-old centre-half? I don't think you are. And if you're a club near the top of the league, you know, are you going to put your faith in a 19-year-old centre-half? I'm not sure, you know. So I don't really have any issue with him going to France. I think the important thing is that he plays football and plays regular football over there. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens and how quickly he can break into the team, and if he stays there, and if he does stay there, to what level he performs. I think Arsenal obviously need to be convinced by him to a certain extent as well. You know, I think the way that his situation has been managed has been terrible. I think it probably is something which will... I hope it doesn't have a really... If he develops into the kind of player that we all hoped he would be, I hope it doesn't have a really detrimental effect on his relationship with the club and everything else. You know, I saw somebody...
How confident are you he'll come back?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, we've made a £28 million investment in this guy. So that's not nothing. And it's not something we can write off, particularly as there are some other transfer fees that we might be writing off as well. So I think if he does well for Nice, and he comes back in the summer, and he is more developed and more mature as a player, then, you know, why wouldn't he get chances at Arsenal, even if it is cup games, EFL games, Europa League games, whatever it might be next season, if we get into the Europa League? You know, I think what kind of football we've got going on next season will be very interesting as well, and may have an impact on that, you know, because if you don't have European football, you don't maybe need the squad depth. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I don't think as a club we can afford to write off £28 million of a footballer, you know?
No, and I do think, you know, like I say, he's got pedigree, and it may be that it takes time. But I think when we signed him initially, I think it was to a 6-year contract, the first of which was spent on loan at Saint-Étienne. I mean, if a second one of those is spent, or should have been spent, out on loan as well, that's not necessarily a disaster. You know, he might come into his kind of best competitive age at kind of, you know, in his mid-20s. So yeah, we have to try and maximize this investment that we've made.
Yeah, look, the mistake, as we've said, is not doing the deal to send him out on loan. That is the big, big mistake, because I saw some people saying, well, you know, maybe it's been good for him to be around and to integrate into the club and to, you know, train with some more senior players. I'm not sure I buy that. You know, he'll look at this as 6 months of his professional career where he's played, what, two or three under-23 games and played in the fucking Papa John's trophy. He's not looking on those 6 months as any way developmental, and I don't think Arsenal can either. You know, he should have been playing first-team football for somebody. He really could have been playing Europa League games for us, and, you know, maybe that would have been the right way to do it if we fucked up that paperwork. I can't quite figure the timeline of this. Was the paperwork fucked up before or after we had to submit our squad to the Europa League? Can you remember?
I think it was before. And then we thought we would find a loan for him in the Championship, potentially. And that's why. But, I mean, that whole kind of, you know, hokey-cokey of if he was in the squad or going out on loan, I mean, that was all a complete disaster. And, you know, I think, to be honest, Arsenal fully recognised that. I mean, then they have to. It was a real screw-up. And it was a consequence of being, I guess, stretched towards the end of the window. But this guy's future and development has been really harmed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, let's see. I hope he does really well at Nice. And, you know, he's got some lost time to make up for. And, you know, if he can perform and come back and really challenge for us next season, then that's the most positive outcome we can have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Show him another question.
Yeah.
Matt, who's at Toy That Kills, says, would you put any importance into signing a goalkeeper this month? Where would you prioritise it among the business that we could do? It feels like we're gambling on Bernd Leno's fitness at the moment.
Yeah, I saw that question. I, if I were Arsenal, would be very keen to, even if it was bring in a Mart Poom-esque signing in January, I'd be quite open to that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not convinced by Alex Runerson. And I worry that if something does happen to Bernd Leno, yeah, we could be, like, I can't see him doing a Manninger, you know what I mean?
No.
Even if he does kind of slightly remind me of Manninger a bit.
He has sort of physically, he has some similar traits.
Yeah, he's a small blonde boy.
Yeah, that's what it is. Could we get Manninger and swap him back in somehow? What's Manninger up to? No, I agree with you. I think that the difficulty is probably the registration one. It's probably homegrown. You know, we've banged on about this. Arsenal wanted a homegrown keeper in the summer, and they chose ultimately to not go for one in Runarsson. And I think that is a bit of an issue. I would fully approve. You know, I'm trying to think of who's around.
So it would have to be somebody English,
or who did their
training
in the UK. Or in England or Wales, I think it has to be.
I mean, the obvious one that comes to mind, of course, is Stuart Taylor.
Perfect man. Sure. Richard Wright and Stuart Taylor, what are they up to?
Yeah, exactly.
I think Stuart Taylor, he just retired, sadly. I think he retired, 2018, he stopped playing. That was a couple of years ago. Yeah, don't know. Can't think of one. But if there is like a sort of 38-year-old keeper lying around without a club, I'm sure Arsenal Twitter can find us one.
Yeah. Do you think that this is something that they might be thinking?
That's not something I've heard. But because I think it's all steam ahead, David Raya in the summer. You know, but
this is why I'm talking about like a loan deal.
Yeah. Can we get special dispensation from the FA?
We can just do a loan deal. We don't need any special. Just do a loan deal. Bring in an experienced goalkeeper who can provide some measure of reassurance.
Well, we're only allowed, I think, two loan signings, and one is Danny Ceballos. So if we were to loan a creative midfield player, I don't think we could loan a goalkeeper as well. I think I'm right about that.
But you could sign a potential free agent on a short-term deal.
Yes, exactly. So we need a guy.
Mm.
Yeah, Premier League clubs may not register more than two players on loan at any one time, PremierLeague.com says.
Right.
So that is, I suppose, the quandary. We need a free agent. We need someone. What's Jens Lehmann up to? Do you know what I mean? He did it once before. I mean, it is fascinating. It's an FA Cup tie this weekend. Do you think there's any chance of Frenarsson playing that?
Possibly. Possibly. I mean,
I don't think he will. I think he'll play Leonard. But, because wasn't Frenarsson not even on the bench for the game after the incident? What match was it? It's Man City, was it?
The EFL Cup game.
Yeah. Is that right? That he wasn't on the bench? I don't know. Who did we play after that? Chelsea,
yeah. He was on the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was, yeah.
I might have that wrong. Apologies in that case, I was wrong, but he was on the bench, you're right. But I don't know, be interesting, big decision I think for Arteta, that, you know, well, only so big, it's only the FA Cup, but, you know, does he put Frenarsson back in after the City game? Well, one for the preview pod, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, here is a question from the Discord from Boom Shakalaka, who says, what do you think Willian's introduction on Saturday means for Pepe? Against a tired, deflated West Brom defence, Arteta chose him to come on over our record signing. I can't help but think they'll be looking to push him out the door at the end of the season.
A quick aside on this. You know when Willian kind of had that opportunity towards the end of the game?
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Left-footed shot, was it?
Yeah. Can I ask you, did you want him to score?
Did I want him to score? Like, it wouldn't have bothered me if he'd scored.
I've seen some Arsenal fans online saying that they kind of half didn't want him to score because they thought, oh, we're back in the team.
I tell you what was more bothersome to me was like the two or three times he just gave the ball away after coming on. That sort of exercised me more than him missing a chance.
I did want him to score.
I wasn't actively rooting for him to miss. I wasn't sitting there going, missing, right. When an Arsenal player's in front of goal, he has a shot. You know, it happened in, 2 seconds. I wasn't there sort of going over the permutations. Or if Willian scores this, then he might get back into Mikel Arteta's good books and therefore he could displace Bukayo Saka. But no,
sure,
it all
sure.
just happened. It was like, oh, shot. Okay, well,
guy
whatever.
In red shot. Yeah. Hope it goes in. Yeah, I think it was his first shot on target since the opening day. I might be right. But I was desperate for that to go in just because the way I look at it, we're sort of stuck with that player. And he might as well be good. Like, if there's anything that can ignite something and to get some performances out of him, so, you know, that would be great. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. What does it mean for Pepe? It doesn't look good, does it? And I think I have this sort of nagging feeling that Arteta's stance on Pepe and Saliba is a little bit related. Like, ultimately, they were kind of the big signings of the previous summer before him and the previous regime. And when you hire a coach, one of the sort of things that you're looking for is, can you maximise our investment? You know, can you get the best out of the players the club has paid for? And I slightly get the sense that there's a bit of resistance from Arteta to that idea.
I wonder about that. I do wonder. I mean, I think a coach's responsibility is to maximise the investment that a club has made, whether you've bought the player or not. You know,
he
didn't buy Kieran Tierney and he plays Kieran Tierney all the time. You know, so it's not simply a case of, well, because that signing is associated with that previous setup or regime, I'm not going to use them. I mean, Ceballos was a signing for the previous regime as well, you know, and he uses him fairly frequently. So I think that would be disturbingly or worryingly small-minded. I just think it's more to do with as we've spoken about before, how Arteta views the players themselves rather than their provenance or how much they cost or who spent the money on them, you know? I think it's to do with his own personal opinion of those players. I mean, I think it augurs quite poorly for Pepe that he didn't come on in the West Brom game. You know, he's now a £72 million third choice right winger, which is a situation that is surely unsustainable.
Yeah, I mean, I had the sense against West Brom that Pepe was being that Willian was being brought on because they thought maybe he'll get a goal and it might, you know, you never know what might sort of jumpstart his Arsenal career, if anything. But yeah, I agree, the portents for Pepe are not good. And it's funny, it's only a few weeks since, you know, he was tearing it up in the Europa League group stage and we all hoped that he'd step up into Premier League. I think the biggest thing that's hurt him is just Saka stepping into that role and kind of being everything we hope for from Pepe,
yeah,
really.
Exactly. Saka's come in and, you know, he hasn't cost us a penny. He's an academy graduate. He's come in, he's played on the right-hand side, and he's done all the things that we hoped Pepe would do in the last couple of games that Pepe just hasn't been able to do with any consistency in, you know, the 18 months that he's been at the club. So there was another point I was going to make there, which I'm sure was really excellent and interesting,
sure,
but I can't remember.
Yeah. I do feel a little bit like the writing is on the wall at this point. And it's sort of, you know, it's kind of the first time I've really thought, oh, yeah, I think he'll leave.
Yeah, I think, the point I was going to make is this, is that even if Edu and Arteta have made a decision or they're open to the idea that Pepe is not a player that they want in the long term and, you know, we should move him on, I think it's really important that they don't tank him. You know, it's hugely important. This is a £72 million player who we are never going to get £72 million for anyone. It's just not going to happen in this market or otherwise. So what they have to try and do is maintain as much value in him as possible. And that's going to mean playing him. That's why, you know, he could play in the FA Cup this weekend against Newcastle. Yeah. I think he will. And I know some of it's Europa League, but only, I think, no, yeah, only Lacazette has more goal involvements this season. He scored 9 goals. Pepe has 5 goals and 3 assists. You know, so there's
it's not that he's useless.
No. Look, I don't think it's a signing that's worked out. It looks more and more like a signing that won't work out. But between now and the end of the season, A, he is a player who can make a contribution, who can produce, even if it is nowhere near as consistent as we would like. So we've got to try and get as much out of him as we can, which in turn keeps his value as high as possible. So we, if we do sell him, don't suffer a huge loss.
Yeah, I agree. A couple of things on that. One, I don't know what Arsenal could get for Pepe either now or in the summer. I mean, I think it'd be in the summer. But let's say it was, I don't know, I'm just plucking a number, but 30 million quid or something like that, if that's feasible. There aren't that many players in the squad that Arsenal can sell for that kind of money for various different reasons. So if Arsenal are in a position where they need to sell to buy, you know, that is a hit they might have to take just to bring something in. The other thing I was looking at is I was looking at the kind of signings vaguely in that price bracket. And there are so many that you look at from other clubs and you go, yeah, I'm not sure that worked out. You know, like if you look at Man United, they paid 85 million euros, it says here, for Lukaku, 87 million euros for Maguire, you know.
Di Maria is one that springs to mind.
Di Maria is up there. Kepa to Chelsea. James Rodriguez to Real Madrid. Morata to Chelsea, nearly 80 million euros. Basically, you look at these signings in this bracket, even like if you look at Pogba and Bale going to United and Madrid respectively. I mean, Bale did win a lot early on, but it's such a big gamble, such a big outlay when you buy any player for that much money. Mm. And I don't think enough of these signings provide value. I mean, ultimately, it was very exciting to buy a player for that much money, but Arsenal just should absolutely not have done it. Mm. They should have bought three players for a third of the price, you know, and it's easy to say that now with hindsight. Sure. But I do think when you look at those big, big, big marquee signings, their chances, if it's not Ronaldo, their chances of proving value are pretty slim, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it comes back to the way Arsenal views their resources. You know, like everyone, I hope William Saliba comes good and becomes the player that we want him to be. But, you know, you've got to ask questions about spending £28 million on an 18-year-old who hadn't even played 20 professional games. Mm. You know, at a time when that money could have been used in the Arsenal squad on perhaps a more experienced player who could have done a job for us. I know you're buying potential and you're sort of taking a gamble on potential. If it pays off, you're a genius. When it doesn't, you know, where are you? Yeah. You know, between those two players, and I'm not blaming the players here, but £100 million on Pepe and Saliba, what could we have done with £100 million in a different way? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
Okay. I think we have one more here before we call it quits. Very quickly, again, from the Discord, it's from Vicky Temwa, who says, with Lacazette hitting form 18 months before his contract expires, what will you do considering the Ozil and Aubameyang situations?
Yeah, Arteta's some quotes have just come out from the manager talking about Lacazette's contract, where he said, we've not talked about it yet, we'll talk about it in the summer. Mm. I mean, I think the club not talking about it to him yet probably tells the player everything he needs to know. I don't think he's got much chance of getting a new deal at Arsenal.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they were minded to give him a new deal, they'd be talking about it now.
Yeah, the difficulty they might have is, come the summer, they might have a player saying,
I'm happy enough here for another 12 months.
Exactly. Mm. You know, how old will he be when his contract expires? If he's now...
He'll be 30 in the summer.
He'll be 30 in the summer. So he'd be 31 in 2022 with freedom to go wherever he likes.
Yeah.
And probably pick up a 3-year deal.
From us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the opportunity to sell Lacazette probably was... The best opportunity was probably last summer, as we know.
In a normal market, I think that would have been absolutely fair.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, given what happened during the summer, it was... Yeah, I feel like that probably had an effect.
But then you sort of have this weird quandary where you're like, well, you know, when we get to this summer, I mean, I guess they'll be open to offers. They'll be saying, if someone wants to come and buy Lacazette off us, they're perfectly entitled to do so. But people might think, well, we'll just wait a year and have them for free. It's a sort of strange one now, isn't it? Because I don't know how many takers there'll be this summer. Well, I mean, if he has a very good season, I mean, he's having a very good season goal scoring wise, so that might help.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think what Arsenal would like to do is sell him in the summer. If they're not giving him a new contract, it suggests that they're open to selling him. I wouldn't have any real problem with that. You know, when we talked earlier about the kind of age profiles of players, you're not going to give a new long-term deal to a 30-year-old striker, you know, who's you know, demonstrated signs of decline. I think.
For sure.
You know, he's scoring and absolutely credit to him, but I think he's demonstrated signs of decline. I think the risk, as you point out, is with 12 months left on his deal, he might just be quite happy to say, I'm staying. I think there's a really interesting discussion, though, isn't there, about what we do long-term in the striking position, because Lacazette's, you know, if he's off in the summer, let's say we do sell him, then we've got Aubameyang, who's 31, and we've committed a fair amount of resources to him, but has got a finite number of years left at the top level. After that, you've got Nketiah, who's also heading towards 12 months left on his deal.
Mm.
And there's a decision to be made. Do you give Eddie a new deal? We've got following Balogun, who's who knows what's going to happen there. Same agent as Eddie, so that makes it complicated. Do you negotiate with Eddie and not Balogun? Do you negotiate with Balogun and not Eddie? How do you make it work and keep everybody happy and on side? And Martinelli, of course, is a huge talent. He might well end up as a centre forward, but, you know, come the summer, you could be looking at... I mean, they've got to have some kind of a plan, surely.
Well, it's one of those awkward positions where Arsenal don't have anyone in that kind of 24 to 27 bracket, really. They've got a couple of guys who think, yeah, they could be great in a couple of years' time, maybe. And they've got a couple of guys who are sort of towards the end of their careers.
Yeah.
And I think centre-forward, well, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if come next summer, Arsenal are looking to buy a centre-forward. I do wonder about that. I mean, I have a sneaky hunch. I don't know what you think about this. Do you think there's any chance? If someone said to me, put your money on a surprise sale in this January transfer window, I'd say Eddie Nketiah.
I wouldn't be massively surprised by it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I just think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be massively surprised by it.
I just look at it and you sort of think, well, look, Martinelli can play there. There's the possibility of Balogun. I mean, right now... You know, in terms of Eddie Nketiah getting minutes for Arsenal, now they're out of the Europa League group stage, Lacazette and Aubameyang are your kind of number one and number two in whatever order, centre-forwards, most probably.
Yeah.
If they're not available, you have the option of Martinelli. I just wonder if there's a chance he might get squeezed out. I don't know, but yeah. With the 18 months as well.
Depends what's on offer or who's offering. And,
of course.
You know, I think the thing people might say is, well, if Nketiah goes, then you can demonstrate a clear pathway for someone like Balogun, you know? But the agent thing, I think, really just makes that complicated to... Not impossible to overcome, but it does make it a little bit more complicated when you're negotiating an exit with a guy and, you know, saying, well, he's going so we can give you the way in. And if Eddie doesn't necessarily want to go, which he might not want to because he's, you know, he's an Arsenal lad, then... You know, does it cause a little bit of friction? But yeah, I think it's a complicated situation that we've got going on there.
For sure. And I think as well, you know, the agent in question, he's a very shrewd operator and someone who's not afraid to take a player away from a club. You know, I find it very hard to feel confident about the Balogun situation.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's the same agent as Bukayo Saka and Reece Nelson. And I wonder, as you know, whatever's going on with Reece Nelson at the moment, he's not injured and he's not making the squads. So,
sure. You
know, does an agent think, well, my clients aren't best served if they stay here at Arsenal? Layers of intrigue and complication and, you know, in-game politics and all that kind of stuff that you know, clubs have to deal with when sorting out individual player situations. You know, the answer always seems simple, but there's always a lot going on in the background.
But with the Nketiah one, I mean, you know, the question of a new contract, look, I again, it wouldn't annoy me too much because I think he'll always have that sale premium attached to him as a young English player. He's got a great record with England 21s. None of that will hurt. But I also look at the Premier League, and there are a number of teams who are really struggling to score goals. Arsenal, until recently, have been one of them.
Mm.
But, you know, the likes of Wolves, Burnley, Fulham, West Brom, Sheffield United, they all need goals.
Did you say Wolves?
Yeah, they've only got 18 goals. And Raul Jimenez is out, isn't he, for a while with a fractured skull. I don't know.
Just my perception of Wolves was obviously very different.
Yeah, no, look, they're a better club. But listen, they were in for Ainsley Maitland-Niles. They make some very smart signings. Wouldn't surprise me if they looked at a young English player. Those are names I'm picking off the top of my head. I don't know. But I just wonder if there might be people interested. Crystal Palace, you know, and you come and knock on the door and say, could we have Eddie on loan? And I wonder if Arsenal in that position might be tempted to say, well, give us 20 million quid and you can have him. I don't know.
Let's see. It's going to be an interesting month, I think. I think it is going to be, there's going to be some shit going down. So look, as ever, we will cover it for you here on the podcast and on the site and everywhere else. So I think we better leave it there for today because we've had a big, long second half here. We will have some Patreon stuff for you this week. We'll have, I think we're going to have a tactics podcast rather than a player a game preview podcast because we're just doing those for the Premier League. We've also got an episode of the Statements podcast coming up on Wednesday, so I'll give you details of that. If you fancy signing up, you can do it, patreon.com/arseblog. James, thank you very much. As ever, it has been...
Magnifique!
Thank you. Wishing everyone a very magnifique 2021.
All right, we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.